As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
New VanCast for you. In the wake of a 4-0 loss to the Winnipeg Jets on Monday night, and Tom, Canucks owner Francesco Aquilini seemed mildly amused at the idea of injuries with an exclamation point during the day, but by night's end, I'm guessing he didn't quite find the injuries quite as endearing.
No, and I mean, yeah, it was funny when I saw it in the day, right? Like, injuries, yeah, with an exclamation mark. Like, how do you do a dramatic reading of that tweet? What emphasis do you put on the word injuries? Like, is it excitedly like, injuries? Or is it like, injuries? Or like, you know, like, I had some fun with that. We had some fun with that in the press box.
Right.
And then the third period begins, and Bo Horvat gets struck in the ankle area by an Alex Edler slap shot and goes down in a heap and, you know, can't make the walk down the tunnel. Clearly couldn't put any weight on it. Looked severe. Like, it looked really severe. And that sucks. Like, that just sucks. But, you know, it goes to show you, like, I was thinking about what is the goal of the injuries tweet? And I feel like it was directed to the team more than anything else. It was like, we're not selling. All the speculation about us selling is ridiculous. Like, yeah, sure, we added $1.6 million in prorated salary, something, you know, that we've had to fight in a season in which every single department in our organization has had to fight tooth and nail. We've added $1.6 million in prorated salary over the last 6 days, but that doesn't indicate that we're going to be sending additional salary out later. This isn't to position us to do that. This is, in fact, is an investment in our playoff hopes. Like, sure, yeah, okay. You have to be a child to believe that, first of all. But also, I feel like that was the point, right? Like, the point was to tamp down on pressure and expectations that the club is positioning themselves to sell, even though everyone in the industry looked at those moves and said, this team is now for sure, at some point, going to move some pieces. That's what I think was the purpose, right?
Well, he was excited because Travis Boyd had become available. And why did Travis Boyd become available? Because the Toronto Maple Leafs have too much depth that they tried to put a player like this on waivers, and the Canucks scooped him up. And so, yeah, the owner seemed awfully excited about a second waiver claim in the span of, what, 5 or 6 days, both of them, as it turns out, from the Toronto Maple Leafs. But injuries with an exclamation point, and I'm thinking to myself, like, What do the injured guys think about that? Like, is he? I've never seen an owner in professional sports get excited about injuries.
No, and I don't even like. Yeah, it was just weird. You know what? You're always tempting fate with something like that, right? Like,
sure.
That's my first thought always when I see something like that. That was my first thought when I saw it yesterday. That's been the case a couple of times, right? Like when he did the big vouch for management and coaching staff thread right before a Saturday night game, for example, and I don't remember who that game was against. I think it was the Flames, maybe?
It was, yeah. Mid-February against Calgary.
Mid-February, he puts that out, and then they play a game 2 hours later, and it's a good performance, right? Like, the team, everyone's joking about how Francesco inspired the team, right? But it's like, what would that thread have looked like if you'd gotten shelled? You know, like, I always think in those terms, especially because, you know, and people listening to this podcast who've heard me break down, like, when should Jim Benning speak and stuff, right? Like, I always try and make it so that you're kind of results independent, right? Like, you're not dependent on a win. You can capitalize on a win after the fact, but I don't ever want to be counting on a win to help my message. And, you know, I felt like there's been a couple where I felt like he was tempting fate. And then last night, of course, it turned out that way. And that makes it not funny, right? Like, the, you know, we didn't even lean into the injuries joke in the armies last night because, honestly, we're just concerned for Bo as a human being, right? Like, that, it just sucks. And it just looked awful. That's sort of the big picture takeaway. Like, it doesn't matter really that the Canucks lost. It doesn't matter really that, you know, the playoff odds are circling down the drain or what have you. Like, all that really matters big picture now is, you know, that Bo Horvat's hopefully all right. And I thought there was some fascinating comments from Brock Besser, you know, yesterday in his daytime availability, talking about his range of motion. And, you know, I asked him basically on the thing, like, what work have you put in to make that slap shot from the left circle so potent? And he said, I'm able to rotate differently because the lower left side of my back, like, it, you know, I have a different range of motion there now. And immediately, you know, you go back to everyone was thinking about the velocity on his shot from the wrist and all this speculation in recent years. But man, like, he had a devastating injury in the bench door. And that's clearly what he was referring to. Like, that's where he's looser now and able to shoot in a totally different way. And then he sort of talked about how much he's learned about taking care of his body, how big a grind it is to play game after game in the NHL, and how he's passing that knowledge along to Hughes and Pettersson and Hoglander, and how it's changed his perspective about preparing and being an athlete. And, you know, these injuries are hard to come back from. They really, really hurt, and they really limit what a player can do. In Horvat's case, you just hope that he's all right. Like, you just hope that he's, you know, that it looked worse than it was, that he's avoided something too severe, and that this isn't something that's going to hold the Canucks back or hold Horvat back in the long term. And we'll know more later today, but, you know, there's a reason you don't tweet injuries with an exclamation mark. And it's just that the whole context can flip on you within 12 hours. And it did lay yesterday for this team.
As for the game itself, and we won't go too deep here, and I guess we better get used to not going too deep in the games because the results really aren't going to matter over these final 20. But it was funny to me, at least. I slid over to you and Harm. We were, you know, separated by a post in the makeshift press box at Rogers Arena last night, and I slid over to your side after two periods, and it was 1-0, and I said, they're going to find a way. They're going to find a way. And I believed that. Like, Thatcher Demko had given up one goal on a 2-on-1 at that point, and this had sort of been their, you know, path forward here for so many games where they hadn't been particularly good, but Demko had kept them hanging around. Even the other night in Montreal, right? They were down going to the third, and they get the two quick strike goals early in the third period, and they didn't win, but they got that one to overtime. Like, I truly believe that even though they weren't very good, that somehow they were going to find a way to get the goal that they needed, and then a minute into the third period, Edler fells Horvat, and that certainly changes the complexion because all in all, in that sequence, before you knew it, it was 2-0, and at 2-0, it kind of felt over. But honestly, I guess even though they were getting outshot badly, but that's been their sort of MO for the longest time, they had built up some currency in my mind that they were still going to find a way, because I didn't think the Jets were great. Like, there was a sequence in the second period where
yes,
the Canucks had the Jets pinned. Like, they got a full line change in. It started with Miller and Vertanen and Vesey, and then I think it was Roussel, and I kind of lost track of who they were all playing with last night, but whatever the case, like, you know, I see the Jets, and they've got top-end talent, and they've got Connor Hellebuck, but their Achilles heel is their defense. We've talked about that. I think the hockey world at large has talked about that, and you saw it play out there, and I just thought, like, they're going to find a way. They are going to find a way. Unfortunately for them, they didn't. And then the third period got away from them. It wasn't really a 4-0 game. Travis Green afterwards, what did he say? They played their asses off. And the game was closer than the final score indicated. Not that that matters in the big picture, but I did think that, you know, on balance, it was a fairly even hockey game.
Yeah, it was. In fact, the Canucks were probably the narrowly better team at 5-on-5, and the Jets were the narrowly better team at overall, like, including special teams. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And I think the Canucks, like, this was the comeback to earth game. You know what I mean? Like, this was the game where they hit three posts in the third period, right? Like, think about that Ottawa game and how many times the Senators hit iron and crossbar and the Canucks win by a goal. You know what I'm saying? Like, every game, think about that Saturday night game against Montreal. That Saturday night game against Montreal, how much harder did it feel like Montreal had to work to get a goal than Vancouver? Like, didn't it almost feel like Montreal was playing in a world with gravity and the Canucks were playing in a world without? They were, like, bouncing over buildings in a single jump and the Habs were taking the stairs. Like, it was wild. So the Canucks, this was the comeback down to earth game. Like, all of a sudden, all the bounces that the Canucks had got abandoned them. And, you know, the thing to remember too is this was also, there's two other things about this game. This game is the Spider-Man pointing at the other Spider-Man game. Like, the Jets and the Canucks are basically the same team, as far as I'm concerned. Like, neither of these teams is particularly good, in my view, in terms of controlling play and their overall two-way ability. They both have elite talent, and they both have a couple defenders that I really like. But overall, in terms of controlling play, neither team is particularly good at it, and they are super reliant on special teams and goaltending to get their wins. That was what I sort of expected from this game, and I think that's what played out. They were effectively, like, completely level, aside from the fact that, you know, one team got bounces last night, one team didn't, and it was a 4-0 win as a result. The other thing is, we called that the date night game a couple weeks ago, right, J-Pat? We looked at the schedule and we said
date night game. Credit, full credit to you here in honor of our good friend Botch. Like, you can do a back pat here because you did. You called this the prescribed loss game. And look, as we went through that road trip and we were trying to assess who was going to play in goal and how they'd all handle it, it really was never about the 4-6. It was, remember, you know, they're coming back home and they're playing Winnipeg on Monday night. It's 5-8. And right. And yeah, you laid that out there. So, hey, full credit to you on that one.
Yeah, that super lethargic first two periods, right? Like, just both teams.
Yeah.
The tired puppies gnawing each other's faces. I had that in the holster. And now, J-Pat, I'm going to make a call a few weeks out again, just to do it again. Now that I've got some currency in calling which games you should, you know, schedule your social life around for our listeners, a service we provide here on the VanCast. I've got another one for you, and it's also against the Winnipeg Jets. So the Winnipeg Jets and the Canucks play on Wednesday, and then they'll play again on Sunday it's April 4th. April 4th, Sunday, the Canucks play in Winnipeg. Now, they play in Edmonton the night before, and that's a Hockey Night in Canada game. So that's an 8:30-ish, like it's an 8:22 local puck drop in Edmonton. 8:32 or 8:22 local puck drop in Edmonton to accommodate Hockey Night in Canada. And then they fly that night to Winnipeg for 4:30 arrival in Winnipeg and then play that night at 7:00 Winnipeg time. That's a classic. Like, that game will be tied after 45 minutes or close after 45 minutes. And then the Jets will get three third period goals. Like, for sure. Two or three. They will make it a blowout in the third period as the Canucks' legs abandon them. That is the mother of all schedule losses this season. Might as well hand the Winnipeg Jets those 2 points. And that's, you know, a tough sort of thing to wrap your head around, because the Canucks now have 20 games. They have 35 points. Dom Lecision's projecting that the playoff bar is 66. So that means they need 31 points from their remaining 20 games. That's 15-4-1, J-Pat. 15-4-1. And if you're buying my schedule loss logic, that's 15-3-1 for the Canucks the rest of the way. And, you know, I know I've taken some heat. I don't want to do any more Twitter meta commentary, but I know I've taken some heat for being so narrowly focused on the Canucks selling and the need to sell. And I've been like that for about 5 weeks now. And the Canucks have made moves to position themselves to do so. They have got extra bodies in Vancouver. They've taken advantage of two minor league injuries to get guys lapsing through their quarantines while they recuperate. They've taken advantage of the waiver wire from a Canadian team. They got VC into their bubble with no quarantine. Boyd will quarantine in a week. That means he'll be available before April 2nd. You remember that April 2nd deadline? We talked about it with Rick a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Canucks have clearly been working to it, right? Like, credit to them. They've been prepared. They've been cognizant. And they've been focused on the big picture, too. And if they'd woken up today and done the math and said, we need 15 wins and an overtime loss in our remaining 20 games, and we don't probably have Bo Horvat or Elias Pettersson for at least the first couple, and we might not have Sutter or Beagle either, and Graevac might be our third line center for a stretch here. Oh my God, right? It would have been too late to get those bodies up. Like, they would have been hosed. They couldn't have had enough players on their roster for the trade deadline day. And on the 12th and the 14th, when they play the Oilers, they would have been like risking playing 10 defensemen. Like 10, like eight or nine defensemen in their lineup if they hadn't taken these steps. So, people are like, well, look, the Canucks were preparing for this. Like, you were so wrong to blast them for it. Like they're going to tell you what they're going to do. It's like, first of all, I'm not commenting on this team just based off of public comments. Like, there's hard debates that happen internally that, you know, lead to these types of outcomes. Clearly, the team has done the right thing, kept their eye on the ball, positioned themselves to sell. But could you imagine if they hadn't? Like, how does that not underscore the stakes of them gearing up to sell over the past month? And by the way, I want to mention one more thing, JPAT, which is this. Right now, there's a lot of teams that are thinking to themselves like, oh, you know, we still have a shot here. The Rangers, the Flyers, the Nashville Predators, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, these are teams that clearly should be sellers. Oh, the Arizona Coyotes that should be sellers. They're not yet. A lot of these teams are not aggressively selling yet. And you know what's going to happen over the next 2.5 weeks, JPAT? Because these teams aren't good, they're going to sag and become sellers. Like, right now, there's three or four teams, Sabres, Ducks, Senators, Red Wings, that we know are going to be deadline sellers. If the Canucks were to join that group, that makes like 5 to 8, depending on how the Devils and the Sharks feel about themselves. There's 5 or 8 sellers, guess what? There's less supply. Simple economics. The prices are higher for your pieces right now. If you jump the market, if you wait 3 weeks, if you wait, there's going to be 12 to 15 sellers, and that depresses prices. So jumping the market, being proactive, remains a crucial and urgent matter for the Canucks. It's still an urgent matter for the Canucks, but to their credit, the Canucks front office has seen this clearly enough to position themselves to have the flexibility to do what needs to be done in the weeks ahead. It's going to be really tough to do, though. We're not exactly sure what the market looks like. That's my quick recap, and I think it's an important one because aside from Bo Horvat's health, that's the second big picture storyline that's going to matter 2-3 years from now, depending on what the Canucks are able to mine from the next 2.5 weeks before the deadline.
I'm just sort of having flashbacks to a trip. I want to say the first year that I was on the beat traveling, the Canucks did an Edmonton on a Saturday night, Winnipeg on a Sunday in the middle of January. And maybe this is foreshadowing to April 4th, but it didn't go well in Winnipeg. They lost 1-0. It was a terrible hockey game. They didn't score. Right. And I know this because that 2-game set came on the heels of, remember when teams had like 5 full days off? It wasn't a week off, but every team had
the bye week.
Yeah. So the Canucks finished ahead of the bye week, their little break, in Minnesota. I flew from Minnesota to Puerto Vallarta through Denver. My wife was down there. She had gone ahead with the kids and had taken me a suitcase of like beachwear because I was in Minnesota in the middle of January. And I remember flying wearing like my heavy jacket and like I didn't have beachwear because I was out on a road trip with the Canucks. So anyways, I arrive in Mexico and like I'm dressed like the middle of winter in Minnesota. That didn't go so well, but got to our place, swapped out. My wife had brought me beachwear, but then the trip continued on the other side of Mexico in Edmonton and Winnipeg in the middle of January. So I had to swap back out and fly from Puerto Vallarta to Edmonton to pick up the Canucks. And it really, yeah, I mean, it kind of, the trip, the Mexican part was great. the trip into Edmonton they lost, and then they went the next night to Winnipeg and lost there as well and got shut out. So just keep that in mind. File that one away for April 4th, because you're right. That feels like, you know, and I think that's the only back-to-backs that they have left. So we'll see where they
enjoy a Sunday dinner. Enjoy a Sunday dinner with the family. Watch some March Madness. Like, that's, you know, if you want to see the Canucks at their best, April 4th is not the night to tune in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Tom, I want to talk to you about two Canucks in particular, because with all of these guys down the middle struck by injury, it seems like this could be an opportunity for Adam Gaudette, who broke into the league as a center, has shipped to the wing, has adjusted reasonably well there, but I would think that he slots right back in, probably as their second-line center now behind JT Miller. So, you know, they always talk about next man up, and one guy's injury is another's opportunity. It's going to be difficult because this isn't a talented team, we know that, but does this strike you at the very least as an opportunity for, you know, Adam Gaudette to have a little bit of a run in the middle of the ice?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge opportunity for Adam Gaudette and a high leverage one. Like, you needed to find out if Adam Gaudette could play center. And I don't think this organization set themselves up to see some of the things that you'd ideally like to see this season, largely because of the situation that is, you know, continued with the coaching staff being unsigned, right? But like, finding out if Adam Gaudette can play middle six center for you is a really high leverage sort of thing that you ideally want to find out. Like, you want to give him 10 or 15 games a run here and figure it out, but you're never going to make those decisions when your coaching staff is focused on, you know, earning their next deals, right? And it's the same with Olli Juolevi, right? Like, VanCast listeners know that I think Olli Juolevi is a depth defenseman for his career, right? Like, I don't see the top four upside or the excitement that a lot of other people in this market do. That's okay. We can all disagree on player evals. Nonetheless, this organization's invested enough in Juolevi, and he's certainly shown enough in a limited run that he shouldn't be missing 13 games. Has he missed 13 of the last 14, J-Pad? Is that right?
It's been a month. It's exactly a month since he's played.
Right. So okay, so maybe he's missed 13 in a row.
I think it is 13 in a row.
Right. So, but Juolevi shouldn't be missing 13 in a row for a team that's whose playoff odds have never gotten above 1-5 over that stretch. You know what I mean? Like, what are we talking about? Like, what are we talking? That's ridiculous. But in a world where, you know, your head coach is out of contract after this year and your penalty kill coach is out of contract after this year, like, you can't go to the penalty killing coach and be like, hey, you know how your next job is going to be determined probably by your PK percentage? Like, you're not going to have the guys you want in the lineup. Like, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. But that's what happens when you fail to align management and organizational incentives, and that's what the Canucks have done. But seeing Gaudette in the middle, seeing Gaudette get some significant run in the middle, seeing Gaudette play with some higher quality line mates, like, that all matters for this Canucks team. Like, that is worth seeing. You need to see it for a length of time, because Gaudette hasn't had the best season. I still think he's better in the middle than he is on the wing. There's some issues obviously there with the first step, but I love the work rate. I love the shot. I love the brain. Like, I love the hockey intelligence that Gaudette has. And I'm curious to know, especially now that he's figured out why he can't put on weight, like, what he looks like in 2 years. You know, like, this is a guy who to me screams, like, could take a step yet. And he didn't take the step this season that maybe some people were hoping for. But I'm not counting out that, like, that's a guy with that type of story, with that type of work rate, with that type of skill set. That's a guy to me who can figure it out a little bit later on than your average NHL prospect. I'm really interested to see what Gaudette can do with that opportunity. And I think it's incumbent on this organization, whether or not they'd had injuries, to figure out and carve out that space for him to develop. Honestly, for me, that's one of the most important things you need to come out of this season with a better idea of, right? Like, can Thatcher Demko be a number one? Looks like it. Can Olli Juolevi play every day for you? We'll see. We haven't seen him in a month. Can Adam Gaudette be your middle six center of the future? who knows? He's mostly played the wing. So at least they're going to get to see that sort of third one. Obviously, we've seen the Demko one. And now sort of the attention turns to Yolevi. But, you know, those are high leverage sort of young player storylines to track here. Look, the other one I think is Zach MacEwen going to play every day for you at any point, right? Like,
no, I'm glad you brought that up because that was the other guy that I was going to mention. But just one quick thing on Gaudet, because I tweeted it out and I saw other people kind of pick up on it. And I had said when all of a sudden Sutter didn't show up at warm-up last night and Tyler Graevac's out there, and I said, oh, it looks like they're going to go into this game with only one of their opening night centers because Sutter wasn't going to play. Beagle was out. Pedersen was out. And it was
Sutter started the season on the wing.
And yes, Sutter did start. Gaudet was the third line center. In fact, scored that opening night on an assist from Antoine Roussel. So yeah, just a point of clarity there. But we know pretty quickly that when things didn't go well out of the gate, Travis Green kind of defaulted to Brandon Sutter as his third line center. So it didn't take long. But on opening night, yes, Adam Gaudet was playing in the middle. Now for MacEwen, and you know, there weren't a lot of scoring chances for the Canucks last night, but MacEwen had a couple himself, including the one when he stepped out of the penalty box and raced away on right wing, right-handed shot, came in, you know, I thought showed some pretty good patience, stopped up.
Yep.
And then I don't know if it was a confidence thing or if this is just who he is, but he could not have drilled Connor Hellebuck any more dead center in the logo from about 12 feet out. Like, you got to do more with the puck. This is the NHL. Like, even if you're not a goal scorer, you got to do better than just ripping it right into, you know, the Vezina Trophy winner's trophy case, essentially. So, MacEwen's had a strange season. Like, he's playing now because of injuries, but you look at the numbers for Zach MacEwen, he's played 21 games, just the one goal that came in Winnipeg, the final game of January, so it's been a month and a half. Not that he's there to score a ton of goals, but just 2 points. But more than that, like, you know, for a guy that size, Tom, I just find, like, he just leaves you wanting. And this was a player that the general manager declared, like, he's a full-time NHLer now. And I think we all agreed, and we were there every day in the summer. Like, he might have been the darling of the summer training camp ahead of the bubble. And something has happened to his growth. And maybe he's topped out. I don't know. But I just too many games where I'm you know, oh yeah, MacEwen's in the lineup tonight. Like, he kind of catches me by surprise when I see him because I just don't notice him for the reasons that I think I should notice a player with his size and, you know, a pretty unique skill set. I mean, the Canucks are not a heavy team. They're not a hard team to play against necessarily. He can be that guy, but he isn't on way too many nights.
Yeah, no, I don't think, and right from training camp, like, I don't think he's been at his best for the Canucks this season. And I think that's, you know, shouldn't be underrated in terms of its impact on, you know, kind of what we expected from the depth that this team has. Because, you know, MacEwen was a guy who was expected to take a bit of a step. He showed with his scoring rates last season that, like, hey, this guy might even have more ceiling than just being an everyday fourth liner. He also is pretty well regarded around the industry, especially among people who've watched the AHL closely. Like, a lot of guys, a lot of scouts, pro scouting types who watch the AHL thought, look, this guy has the work ethic, the speed, the hands, the abrasiveness to play an everyday fourth line role. And, you know, to this point, like, it's amazing the extent to which, like, Louis's often been a choice in front of him, or even though that's obviously not the case now, or, you know, a guy like Michaelis has played top nine and he hasn't. Clearly there's something going on. And part of what's going on, though, I think, is just that MacEwen hasn't earned the rope that, you know, his talent and the regard that the organization has historically had for him would warrant. That's performance-based, in my view. Like, I don't know that I'd look at what we've seen from MacEwen and say he's deserved a ton more. And that's the toughest part about it. Look, you still like the pick yourself up by the bootstrap story. I still like a lot of the raw tools there. But there needs to be more there. And, you know, last night, like, while you're right, he dented the Jets logo on Hellebuck's jersey. Like, at least he had a couple big scoring chances. I think one of them got skied, one of them got hit into the logo. That's going to happen. so long as McEwen's noticeable for those reasons and not for taking, you know, penalties. He also did that last night, right?
Yeah.
So long as that's the case, then, you know, he can make a case for himself. But we need to actually see more of what we saw on Monday from him and fewer of those penalties, like fewer of the tough moments. You know, if he's going to be, forget a difference maker, just like an everyday fourth line player for this club. He hasn't taken that step this season, period. Like there's no debating that. And, you know, I do think that's unfortunate, especially for a Canucks team that was hoping, certainly that he would do so and maybe even provide surplus value a year from now. He's signed for a 2-year deal, right? Like he's on the books next year too. They need more from him as well. And seeing if they're going to get that, I think matters too, especially in a world where, you know, this club's now added VC and Boyd and Jace Howerlux. You know, I don't think it's a stretch to say he's outperformed McEwen by a significant margin, right? There's going to be different options to flesh out their roster. And, you know, McEwen needs to keep making that case. Like he needs to keep scrambling over bodies to keep actually to earn a full-time spot in this lineup. And that requires a level of form that he just hasn't shown to this point.
Waivers! Exclamation point. I want to talk about Travis Boyd and your thoughts on what the Canucks are getting here. We haven't really talked about the player himself.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Canucks certainly hope to see Travis Boyd here in Vancouver. They're not going to see him in the lineup because of quarantine issues. Jimmy Vesey was able to drive. I joked on Twitter yesterday that Boyd should just drive Vesey's car out here. But of course, Vesey's car is still sitting, I think, in the parking lot at Canadian Tire Center in Ottawa. So not that simple, but Travis Boyd will make his way out here. He'll quarantine. Canucks have the full week off coming up. So we're likely to see him in that March 31st game against the Calgary Flames before they head out on the road for 7. But look, we talked about sort of the process earlier on the pod, the fact that the Canucks are grabbing healthy bodies and players that they think can help them, but can also, you know, fill the lineup if in fact the Canucks move bodies out ahead of the trade deadline. So, we talked about that with VC. What about Travis Boyd? This is a guy that broke into the NHL with the Washington Capitals, had a decent rookie season, you know, not huge numbers, obviously, 27, he's a Minnesota guy, signed with the Leafs at essentially the league minimum, so this is one of those types of deals that people here in Vancouver have been howling about for years, that this management group should have gone into the free agent market and signed. They didn't do it in free agency, but they do it here with a waiver claim. What do you make of Travis Boyd?
Travis Boyd is, you know, hardworking, credible NHL depth. He's not a credible middle six guy with a credible middle six parking job. He's a fourth liner for me, but he's a good fourth liner, a versatile fourth liner, a helpful player to have, especially on a league minimum cap hit. No, I like Travis Boyd. Travis Boyd, yeah, cup winner. He's another of those like cup winning caps. The Canucks cornering the market on the 2018 Washington Capitals. And, you know, he's a guy who... One thing I like about the fit is that Travis Boyd has, for years, outperformed in terms of goal differential what the shot differential and shot attempt differential suggests he should accomplish. So this is a guy who's used to playing without the puck and will not get outscored as badly in minutes where your team is getting shelled on the shot clock by the margin that you'd expect him to. And maybe to some extent that's been good fortune for him. But I think for a team like the Canucks that have relied so heavily on the shell game, right? On defending, on goaltending, on counterpunching, scoring against the grain, I think a player like Boyd with that skill set can be additionally helpful. And that's one thing I especially like about the fit from Vancouver's perspective. But look, if you're expecting Boyd to come in and play above average third line minutes, you know, you're likely to be left wanting there.
Again, not going to see him for a little while, just in these COVID quarantine protocols that are in place. It's going to be the better part of a week. But, you know, this is where the schedule, and we spent so much time talking about how the schedule sort of conspired against the Canucks early on. This is now a week where the schedule actually works in their favor. I know other teams have games in hand, but when you've got as many guys down for the count as the Canucks do, not playing for a week will allow some of these guys to heal up. It certainly sounds like Elias Pettersson is progressing to the point that they hope to see him on the other side of the break. We saw Jay Beagle, and I had questioned on yesterday's pod about, like, where is Jay Beagle? He'd kind of gone underground, and then he surfaced at the morning skate, but in a non-contact jersey. So we'll see how quickly he heals up and if he's an option for Wednesday night. Brandon Sutter was the strange one, right? Because he took the morning skate, right? Like, I think we all showed up at the rink on Monday night expecting that Brandon Sutter was going to be in the lineup, but something obviously went down between morning skate and the time warm-up rolled around.
Right. Yeah, and no update from Travis Green post-game.
No, there wasn't.
Not a good sign.
There was. He had no interest in getting into the injured. Somebody asked him about Horvat. Nope. Sutter? Nope. It was.
fair enough. I mean, boy, he does not have centerman to play, right? Like, if there's any VanCast listeners who fancy a seven-day quarantine and think of themselves as an NHL-quality center, like, apply at Rogers Arena right now. There is, you know, there's a sign on the gate 16 entrance, like, we are hiring. I mean, look, what's he going to say? He probably doesn't know much with Horvat, right? And you're not going to say, like,
no,
that's such a high interest one. I don't even think you're going to give the, like, yeah, it's going to be a while. You know, that, like, sullen thing that coaches do when they just sort of indicate that it's serious. Like,
right.
There's no benefit to doing that. Presumably we'll find out more when Travis Green talks to the media. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting thing to see how they adjust to those absences. You know, we saw last year, like, when Beagle and Sutter leave the lineup at the same time, it messed with, like, the Beagle and Sutter aren't great players, but when they're both gone at the same time, it does limit Vancouver's flexibility because it makes it so that Bo Horvat has to face insane matchup minutes. It changes the way that they're able to deploy. Now, when you add Horvat and Pettersson to that equation, like, JT Miller's going to be your matchup center. Like, JT Miller has done really well. I actually thought he played really well again on Monday night. But, like, he's better on the wing. He's better on the wing, first of all. He's fine at center. But now he's going to be your, like, matchup center, like, hard matchup center. Realistically, he's got to play, like, 26 minutes a night because there's no one else you're going to want out against either Scheifele or Dubois.
Right.
Like, yep. It's like, can you play both top six matchups? And that leaves you with, like, Graevac. I mean, how do you decide who plays the Scheifele line? Because I think Dubois is the toughest matchup. So if Miller plays Dubois, how do you decide which of Gaudette or Graevac you're going to throw in against Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Stastny? Like, it's got to be Gaudette, but man, that is not a good spot to be in. That is not a level of options you want. And that's going to make Wednesday's game a really dicey one from a Canucks perspective, which I'd imagine is why they've taken today mostly off.
Right. And we talk about, you know, a great opportunity for Gaudette. And then in the same breath, you're like, oh, shit. Wait a second. He's now going to get these toughs. And maybe it's not such. I mean, it is obviously an opportunity for increased ice time and higher in the lineup. But you're right. If you're Paul Maurice, I mean, you're probably looking to jump that matchup as quickly as you can in the rematch on Wednesday night. And this is after you've just beaten the Canucks by, you know, a 4-0 count. So good opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets. It's a tough situation for the Vancouver Canucks. 20 games to go. Horvat on the limp, certainly, and perhaps on the shelf, and that could very well impact the stake bet. We'll update that in our next pod here, but all of a sudden, Tom's got to worry because Horvat looked like he might be his meal ticket in this stake bet that we've had all season long. But
that's true.
But Horvat's sitting on 14 goals.
Do we prorate for injuries?
Let's of course not. No, you know the rules. You know the rules full well. don't go grinding.
I know the
now.
Rules, and I know that if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So I think we better prorate for injuries.
I just want to mention if you're looking for other pod options here at The Athletic, there are many. Check them out. Ian Mendez and Sean McIndoe have The Athletic Hockey Show. That's Thursdays at The Athletic. And we always urge you, check out the comment section for each podcast episode at The Athletic. And on the app as well, drop us a line if you have any suggestions, ideas. Tom and I putting our heads together, it's always a dangerous thing, but with a week off from game action, coming up with a couple of ideas to get us through here without games to talk about. So there's that week off, and we'll continue to push out fresh pods on the regular, but may do things a little bit differently than we have here the last couple of weeks. So we'll get around to that, but again, check out the comment section for every podcast episode at the Athletic app. And if you're not already a subscriber, we mentioned this earlier, what are you waiting for? Go to theathletic.com/vancast and receive a subscription for just $1 a month. All right, the final game before the week off. It'll be a mystery to all of us to see who's in uniform and playing center ice for the Vancouver Canucks, but we'll find out on Wednesday, and we'll be back with another edition of the VanCast for you Thursday here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.